Today on Annenberg Radio News.
You have a blizzard going on, it's crazy, and then maybe it calms down a little bit, and then the wind starts to pick up.
Listen to the dramatic rehearsal of a winter dance classic. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News. For Wednesday, November 12th, 2014, I'm Carrie Poppy. The Exide Battery Recycling Plant in Vernon may have to clean up its act. The Board of Supervisors voted today to explore legal options to shut down the plant. As Taylor Haney reports, critics of the plant are getting frustrated.
LA Board Supervisor Gloria Molina says she's angry about Exide's feeble attempts to stop contamination and fed up with asking Governor Jerry Brown for help and being ignored.
It is hard for me to control the kind of temper that I have about what goes on here, because this kind of disservice is something that angers every single one of us.
She's talking about previous efforts by Governor Brown, regulators, and the Exide Battery Recycling Plant to clean up their mess. The contamination includes battery acid leaking from trailers on site and high concentrations of lead in the Vernon and Boyle Heights communities. The company has been operating in violation of environmental regulations for nearly three decades. In September, Governor Brown required the plant to meet state standards by the end of 2015. And last week, the Department of Toxic Substances Control, or DTSC, came to an agreement with Exide. The company must set aside $38 million to cover the cost of closing the plant should efforts to contain contamination fail. Exide has earmarked $9 million for cleanup. Roberto Cabrales from Communities for a Better Environment says he's not satisfied with last week's order. He said that the cost of cleanup will far surpass the amount set aside.
So for them to come down and come with an agreement with Exide, it just feels shady because it's still not enough.
So what would satisfy community activists? Mark Lopez, executive director of East Yard Communities for Environmental Justice, says he wants to force a conversation about what justice would look like in his community.
And for us, it's complete and immediate cleanup of the contamination and permanent shutdown of Exide.
County lawyers will report back to the supervisors next week on their legal options to do just that. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
If you drive in Los Angeles, you know a thing or two about potholes, maybe even parts of the street missing altogether. Los Angeles has the largest city street network in the country, roughly 6,500 miles of street, and much of it is in various stages of paving decay. Mayor Eric Garcetti announced his Street Smart plan today, aimed at repairing or repaving 200 miles of roadway a year. Kevin James, president of the Board of Public Works, says the roads are in such disrepair because of years of neglect. He says funding will come from a variety of sources.
Some of it's gas tax money. Some of it is from the general fund. Some of it is from various propositions in which the pavement preservation program shares in those revenues. It amounts to approximately $140 million a year for pavement preservation.
A Los Angeles Times analysis of repair data found there is a 60-year backlog, which means residents might not see streets fixed in their lifetimes. It's estimated that nearly a third of the city's streets need to be resurfaced or totally reconstructed. California is one of the most LGBT-friendly states in the nation. That's according to a report out today that puts the state way above the national average. And in a race among the cities nationwide, it looks like Los Angeles is leading the pack. Kaylin Norwood and Martha Daniel have more on the story.
Today, the Human Rights Campaign, also known as the HRC, released its third annual report measuring LGBT equality nationwide. After studying over 300 cities, Los Angeles was named one of the friendliest cities to the LGBT community. The HRC is the largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender civil rights organization in the nation. The report uses a rating system to measure cities' LGBT inclusion in law, policy, and overall support for LGBT people and workers. California ranked far above the national average, and the city of Los Angeles had a lot to do with that. The HRC gave Los Angeles a perfect score for equality, which only four other cities in California received. But Rebecca Isaacs, the executive director of the Equality Federation of Los Angeles, says the city still has work to do.
Los Angeles did not get points within having transgender inclusive healthcare benefits. So even as we look at how positive our situation is in Los Angeles, we can still see areas for improvement.
The report found that cities in every region of the country earned high scores, suggesting that LGBT equality is no longer confined to the parts of the country previously considered most LGBT-friendly. But again, Isaac sees room for improvement.
Maybe that means you can be fired just for being a member of the LGBT community.
Scores were based on criteria falling under six categories, including non-discrimination laws, relationship recognition, and employment and healthcare policies. Martha Daniel, Annenberg Radio News.
The Board of Trustees of the California State University System are meeting today and tomorrow in Long Beach to discuss the budget for the upcoming school year. The agenda includes a 3% raise for Chancellor Timothy White and other campus executives, an increase of $217 million in state funding, and the school's approach to preventing sexual assaults. Former Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon is taking a look back at his life in a new book. The Hot Seat's Max Schwartz talked to Reardon about his book and the recent election.
Richard Reardon served as LA's mayor from 1993 until 2001. Part of what makes him unique is that he's a Republican in a Democratic city. He has an interesting perspective on the election and race for California Superintendent of Public Instruction because he's a former state secretary of education. Reardon doesn't believe the superintendent will change the surge in charter schools or how the courts rule on teacher tenure. That's in part because he believes unions have control of the legislature. However, he does have strong views on the latter.
Yeah, I think tenure doesn't belong in lower grades. And I don't think it belongs even in the colleges anymore. It certainly did at one time.
I also asked him questions about Mayor Eric Garcetti. Reardon called him brilliant and articulate and believes he will achieve higher office. However, he doesn't give Garcetti the highest rating in his current job.
I don't think he is a good manager. I think he has to learn that to really be a great mayor. He hasn't surrounded himself with very excellent people, weak people to a great extent, and he doesn't get things done. So I'm betting on him for the long run. I think he's a little weak in the short run.
You can listen to my podcast on AnnenbergRadio.org. Max Schwartz, Annenberg Radio News.
A portion of the San Bernardino Freeway was dedicated in memory of the one-year anniversary of the unsolved killing of Joseph Gatto. The 78-year-old former educator was the father of Assemblyman Mike Gatto. Spokesperson Justin Hager says the 10 freeway section is being dedicated to Gatto because of his daily commute.
As one of the co-founders of the LA County High School for the Art, he drove on the 10 freeway to get to work every single day, usually putting in very long hours. We have accounts that he actually, in 40 years, did not ever miss a day of work, which is a testament to both his work ethic and his dedication.
Gatto died of a single gunshot wound a year ago. A $50,000 reward has been set by the LA City Council for information that leads to the killer or the killer's remains. 2 weeks from today, the roadways and airports will be jammed with travelers. If you're planning to fly from LAX, you aren't alone. Kelly O'Mara reports.
Orbis today released its list of airports expected to be the busiest over Thanksgiving. And our Los Angeles International Airport again topped the list. We asked USC students if they had heard the news.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
LAX was number one last year, too, beating out Chicago both years. Travel behavior analyst Nancy McGuckin says the increase in traffic at LAX may be in part because of the rise in international travel overall. But there's another reason all your relatives might choose Los Angeles for the family dinner.
My experience is everybody comes here to visit me. The weather is fine and, you know, there's lots of fun things to do, and it's mostly, I guess, the weather is fine.
During the rest of the year, the percentage of people traveling to visit friends and family is quite low. But McGuckin says during the holiday season, visits to mom and dad and all the old friends back home account for almost 75% of air travel. Yet not everyone enjoys their trips.
Something like 60% of the people who are visiting friends and family do not consider it a vacation.
Students at USC say they're either staying on campus or bracing for the craziness.
And I'm actually very glad that I'm not flying out because I don't like busy airports at all.
I'm flying on the 25th, so I'm not sure if it'll affect me as deeply.
McGuckin has one other tip.
There's really nothing you can do but slap a smile on your face.
You could also try another airport. John Wayne in Orange County is expected to be one of the least busy airports in the country. Kelly O'Mara, Annenberg Radio News.
It's cooling off here in Los Angeles. Right now it's 68 degrees, which is cold to someone like me who owns no weather-resistant footwear. But don't worry, that temperature will climb through the week, hitting 70 tomorrow, 72 on Friday and Saturday. And Sunday is a classic November day in LA at 77 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, it's the anniversary of a bookstore that's over a century old. Clowns are often the ticket for putting a smile on a kid's face. Though clowns are best known as circus performers, you may be finding them in the doctor's office. Dr. Atay Citrone leads the world's first medical clowning academic training program at the University of Haifa in Israel. He recently visited USC and Children's Hospital Los Angeles to explore the possibility of introducing a similar training program here in LA, as Daniel Charbonneau reports.
I am cold. Just a bit of a cold. Is my nose red? Oh, it is.
It's red.
In 1998, Robin Williams starred in the Oscar-nominated film Patch Adams. Patch Adams was based on the true story of a doctor in the 70s who attempted to use humor to ease the suffering of his patients.
What he was trying to do was use humor with the patients. And this is an outrageous idea for white coat medicine.
That's Dr. Atay Citrone.
Think about it. White coat medicine. Hospital, order, it's ritualized order, right? We're dealing with serious issues here. It's solemn. There's hierarchy. The chief doctor, the doctors, residents, nurses. Who's on the bottom of the hierarchy? The patient. The patient. Patch Adams said, this doesn't make sense. We need to change the mindset of the patient and do things that are fun. And how do we do that? By being silly.
Dr. Citrone says that inverting the rigid power structure of the hospital is essential to empowering the patients.
The clown is the only therapist who introduces himself as below in social hierarchy, below the patient. Why? Because the clown is basically an idiot. Clowns are basically failures. What we admire about clowns and what makes us laugh is that in failing with the most basic tasks that we don't even think about, clowns come up with the most ingenious and most imaginative and absurd solutions.
USC professor Brent Blair says clowns are one of the modern day equivalents to the jester or joker. Their role is to disrupt and in doing so, bond with the patient.
It's always been the practice of jokers in history to kind of destroy, deconstruct, break apart power structures. In this case, the power of the doctor, the power of the institution, the sacredness and the cleanliness of a hospital. So you might imagine the clown on behalf of the lowest power figure, which is the patient, to be their secret ally.
Dr. Citrone notes that theatrical performers have often played a historical role in healing their communities.
And shamans are the healers of indigenous societies who heal through performance. So to me, it made perfect sense that performance would be an instrument of healing. Today, we have hundreds, if not over 1,000, probably way over 1,000, medical clowning organizations, Canada, United States, and Mezzo, Mexico, and South America. And it's a growing thing.
To learn more about medical clowning as a profession, visit dreamdoctors.org. Danielle Charbonneau, Annenberg Radio News.
While many readers have turned to iPads and Kindles, Vroman's Bookstore celebrates 120 years in business this week.
In the heart of Pasadena, the largest and oldest independent bookstore in Southern California sits on Colorado Boulevard. Vroman's Bookstore was founded in 1894 and has since been a home for many avid readers. On November 14th, Vroman's Bookstore celebrates its 120th anniversary and continues to be a well-known spot for Angelenos. Sherry Galantine, the head book buyer at Vroman's for 22 years, believes that the store will continue to grow as the demand for tangible books will still exist, even amongst digital books.
You know, you always see people in the airport traveling, they're reading on their iPads, but I do believe that the book still has an important place in people's lives. Many people want to hold the book and feel the paper and turn the pages, and it's not the same reading experience.
Throughout the years, Romans has separated itself from other bookstores due to their devoted staff and regular customers. Rhonda Gross, a customer for 8 years, lives in Las Vegas but considers herself a regular at Romans.
Every time we come to Pasadena, we come at least twice, sometimes three times, just because it's one of the best bookstores ever.
Gross says that Romans is unique compared to other bookstores.
Barnes & Noble has turned into a toy store as far as I'm concerned, and it's really disappointing to go there now because half the store is for kids. It doesn't have a lot of history, doesn't have a lot of philosophy.
Nick Terrones began visiting Romans after his father introduced him to the store last year. Terrones says he visits Romans every single day and spends hours reading new books.
Other stores tend to feel cramped. This one has these nice open spaces and there's a lot of seating, and they are very willing to let you sit, take your time, enjoy, and read.
Sherry Galantine says her favorite part of the job is sharing new books with customers.
The fun part is finding a little gem that maybe wasn't going to be a bestseller, but you read it and you recommend it, you talk to customers about it, and then we turn it into a bestseller.
This week, Romans has organized a variety of events to celebrate their 120th anniversary. But events are irregular at the bookstore. In fact, Josh Osherin, a book clerk at Romans for 5 years, says there are about 250 author events each year.
The author events draw people into the store over and over and over again, and they very much feel like it's their place.
Romans Bookstore carries over 58,000 different books. Despite the surge of Americans purchasing e-books, loyal customers like Rhonda Gross hope that Romans' legacy will continue for decades.
It's just a pleasure to come here, so they're doing something right. I could live here. It's just like home.
Jessica Oliveira, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, the University of Southern California hosted The Many Truths of the Middle East, a live conversation between USC's Sandy Tolan and Harut Ekmanian, a prolific Armenian journalist. Ekmanian writes for Armenian Weekly and has reported from more than a dozen countries. He currently covers the crisis in Syria. I spoke to Ekmanian today about the way America discusses conflict and what we can do to improve that dialogue. So you just gave a fantastic Q&A over at the Tudor Center here at USC.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks. Conversation with Sandy Tolan. And one of the things you mentioned was that there's no such thing as a moderate rebel. And I wondered if you could expand on what that means.
Exactly. Because using this term, moderate rebels, is so odd and so strange to me, because a rebel as an agent cannot be moderate. And I think it is being used as a propaganda. Some groups are being rebranded as moderate groups because there are now more radical groups in the Syrian conflict. And if we speak in the context of the Syrian conflict, labeling some groups as moderates, some groups are as radicals, is not helping us towards a solution. Because we have seen some of those groups who are being labeled as moderates, they are also committing atrocities. Mm-hmm. So we should be careful while using these terms and branding certain groups with these words and let them have all the support.
Mm-hmm. Switching gears just a little bit, I grew up here in the States, right? And I found out about the genocide of the Jews when I was, what, 5? I found out about the Armenian genocide when I was 14. Why?
Because the Jewish Holocaust is recognized, condemned, and the perpetrators are punished, and the people were compensated, and the lesson is taught all over the world. Whereas if we speak about the Armenian genocide, Turkey still denies the Armenian genocide when the lessons of such crimes are taught to the generations. I think that is the best interest of all of us. It's better, it's bigger interest than any trade, any strategical, it's the most strategical step that I can imagine of.
Yeah, it seems like, at least here in the States, we have this notion that humanity screwed up really badly this one time. That, you know, this one major tragedy happened, but don't worry, we never did it again. And
wow.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like that's like the message I received as a young person in the educational system, a very young person. Mm. And yeah, I wonder if just these lessons, that these things continue to be ongoing, would help people examine their own behavior and how you can be contributing to these things without even meaning to.
Well, those are the steps that will eventually lead to world peace. Otherwise, there will never be.
That was Harut Ekmanian, a journalist from Armenian Weekly. Now we check in with Jeremy Chen to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Carrie. Thank you. Well, coming up on ATVN, campus workers and USC students protested in front of United University Church for higher wages. We talked to some students to find out what USC should be doing. Next, the European Space Agency successfully landed a probe on a comet, but there was a hitch. See what one expert has to say. And finally, USC is hosting a Thursday night football game for the second consecutive year. Find out what you need to know to get prepped for the game. All this and more coming up on ATVN.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy.
No problem.
I bet that comet glitch has to do with Bruce Willis.
Of course. Definitely Bruce Willis.
Thousands of productions of the Nutcracker Ballet are held across the country every holiday season. The Los Angeles Ballet will present its version of the classic dance next month. Christina Campodonico visited a rehearsal.
I would say my favorite dance is snow. A snowstorm is always magical, especially when it's in Southern California, right? My name is Catherine Kogel, and I am the ballet mistress with Los Angeles Ballet. And we go. Pour a tendu and soup tenu. I like how it's very precise with the footwork and everything. You have all the échappées and tombé préparées, so to susu and everything. But at the same time, you have these moments of explosion with the grand jetés and even the piqué circle. It's just like a whirlwind. With the music, you hear Tchaikovsky has literally written a snowstorm. You have the calm before the storm at the beginning, you have the flurries, you have just kind of your steady snowfall. Then all of a sudden you have a blizzard. You have a blizzard going on, and it's crazy, and then maybe it calms down a little bit, and then the wind starts to pick up and it's crazy again. And then you have the very end of the snowstorm where everything is so calm and sparkling. You can hear that in the music, and I think that the choreography does a good job of that too. It's following what the music is doing. It's just fun to actually think of the girls, the dancers, as snowflakes, and to just think of them flurrying around the stage. It's really kind of fun to visualize that.
The LA Ballet's Nutcracker will open on December 6th at the Alex Theater in Burbank. It will tour Southern California through the end of the year. That's it for this Wednesday. We had help today from Katie Chen, Shradamur Ali Darun, Kaylin Norwood, Phoenix So, and Danya Zhu. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Camille Rakiestas is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Victor Figueroa. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Carrie Poppy.